of answers, I got just turned to questions. All of answers, I got just turned to questions. All of answers, I got just turned to questions. All of answers, I got just turned to questions.
What if I'm wrong? What if they're right? And we're standing still at the speed of light. Is it really worth it? This golden purpose, I'm silver surfing above the surface. I find my way with no direction. My only compass is my reflection. I'll know one day, gain perspective, and all these answers, they'll turn to questions.
Da 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 da, it sounds like. Da 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 da, and we down like. Da 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 da.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that. You know, I just wanted to make sure I got the music in. So my apologies to the brother Hanif for cutting him off at the end. We had a great conversation. Great mind on the brother. I hope he continues to do his thing, and I hope you enjoy his music. You can check him out. Luck One. And that's it for me today on News from the Boo. We will be back next week, Wednesday, 5:45 p.m. to 6 p.m. One love.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life. Alex McNeil is the executive director for More Like Presbyterians, an LGBTQ advocacy group in the Presbyterian Church USA. Alex is the first openly transgender leader of any organization in a mainline denomination, and he talks with me about next steps for LGBTQ justice in the church. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
That's right. You've been listening to KBOO Portland's Evening News, volunteer-produced broadcast. We are going to go now to Right to Survive Radio.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fay. This show is part two from Detroit and the Water and Housing Conference, focusing on corporate domination and government control to rid impoverished people from their cities, where human rights, safety, welfare, and health are lost to greed and genocide, leaving toxic environmental wastelands and destruction of communities and family units at a loss for profit.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. Today we're in Ground Zero in Detroit, Michigan at the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And I'm here with Monica Beamer.
Hello, everyone, and we're here with Paula Swearingen from the Direct Action Welfare Group in West Virginia. And what's your other group?
Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition in West Virginia. They're based out of Huntington.
We've heard a lot about your work, and we're glad to all be here at the summit.
I'm excited about the collaboration of the international groups. That really excited me to get here and hopefully collaborate with our globe to make a better tomorrow for us all.
That water and housing are human rights.
Right.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your group. I've heard so many good things about all the work you do.
Yeah, we have been active against the irresponsibility of the coal industry for quite some time. Ohio Valley, OVAC is what for short, of Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. Mm-hmm. Mountaintop removal back home, let me begin with that, is when they take the top of the mountain off and they take all the overburden and bury our rivers and streams. We have several forms of mining, underground mining, highwall mining. They combine that with mountaintop removal. So essentially, they don't just take off the top of the mountain, they take the whole mountain.
And so they're basically taking people's land and access to water. Are they creating homelessness and illness in the process?
Yeah, when the coal industry moves in next door, they destroy entire communities with these practices because they do pollute our water supply. They will offer you pennies to the dollar for your house, and if you don't want to accept it, then they come in and do what they want to anyway. They'll knock people's houses off their foundation, crack their windows. They can't deal with the blasting and the water pollution, so people end up having to move out of the communities that we've always called home. And what's happened in West Virginia, too, is the coal industry owns most of our land, and if they don't own our land, they own our minerals most of the time, and we don't own the surface. So when they come in and they decide to mine and your house is in the path, they just take it.
So even if you own your house, they own the minerals underneath so they can go in and do whatever they want.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And if they do just mine underneath, a lot of times, you know, they do so much damage that your house will sink, your well will sink, your water table will sink at times. Then, you know, we have what we call slurry injection and slurry impoundments. Let me explain that. They clean the coal with hundreds of chemicals, and it's a liquid waste. And so they have to do something with that waste. So we have these abandoned mines underneath our communities, and they come in and they inject this slurry underneath our towns. And in the end, it pollutes our groundwater and our water supplies. And then we have these big earthen dams in our communities where they house this waste. It's big earthen ponds, and a lot of times it's like 3 billion gallons of waste that sit over the communities. Back in 1972, we had a disaster called the Buffalo Creek disaster when one of those impoundments failed and over 100 people got killed. And you'd think in 1972 that they would, in the advances in engineering, that these impoundments would not be as unstable. But down in Coal River, we have one called the Slurry, the Brushy Fork impoundment. It's cited by Department of Environmental Protection weekly. It's just as unstable as 1972. And if that dam would bust, it would kill thousands of people. And these set all over Appalachia. And they're not lined with anything. So what happens too is it leaches into people's well water. So their water comes out of their faucet black and orange with these contaminants. It's chemicals, heavy metals. If they're not burying our rivers and streams, they're polluting our rivers and streams. They run black and orange with these chemicals.
And so what you said is the EPA is fining them weekly. So it's illegal what they're doing, but it doesn't really matter in any way.
No, it doesn't matter. The coal industry is like the mafia. It's like the mafia. They own us. Yeah, we're bought and paid for. Mm-hmm. We're collateral damage. We live in a sacrifice zone.
So what is your organization doing? How are you doing? Are you doing direct action, or how are you educating the public or the state or the country?
We lobby, and we've done direct action. We try to change our legislature. Most of the time, they come back and rewrite the bill and kick us back in the teeth, and we keep trying for it. I've traveled all over the nation. You know, we send organizers and volunteers volunteers out to try to educate people about what's going on in West Virginia.
I think Appalachia is one of the regions that has really been, you know, isolated. So it's super important to tell the story of what's happening there. Say your groups again. So groups in Portland, people listening in Portland and our region can go to the website, do what we can, and stop letting them isolate you in this way.
Direct Action Welfare Group, Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. I want people to understand, too, that we live in one of the sickest, impoverished states in the nation. We have higher rates of birth defects, cancer, breathing ailments, asthma. You know, not only are our coal miners getting black lung, but our children are getting black lung. I've buried so many of my family members because of the industry. It feels like our family theme song is Amazing Grace. The same toxins that killed my grandfather and killed my father, you know, my father had cancer at 52 years old and I buried him. The same thing is going into our children's lungs. And I want people to know that, and in our water.
So are you encouraged by the gathering here at this summit?
Yeah, I am. And you know what? I have a special relationship with Detroit. I met Monica Lewis Patrick at a symposium in New York for the UN. And, you know, not only does our water unite us, but our struggles unite us. You know, when you meet family. Now, I was devastated when I toured Detroit and I seen these people were struggling like we are. Housing issues, but the water issues, you know, going down looking at the housing and stuff. It felt like I come from my country home that was devastated to my city home. These people are great, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to come here.
Also, in seeing this, do you think corporate America and the government are creating houselessness to take over the land and use water as a commodity to control poverty people?
Yeah, I think that they don't economically destroy you. They do pollute your water like they do home, and they just take what they want. And, you know, it's profit before people. Public health and safety has come last in this nation, and I think that's disgraceful. And our leadership should be ashamed of themselves for allowing these corporations to come in, you know, pay them. This nation was founded by the people for the people. It wasn't founded for corporations.
It was founded by some of the people. Very few of the people. I think it's important to acknowledge that that is also a myth that keeps us from rising up. Our country was founded on white supremacy and patriarchy and domination, so it continues to this day and shows itself. And also, I think we need to change this system dramatically. Right. And I think you inspire us, and we're inspiring each other, and we need to work together. And I'm looking forward to direct actions that we can do all together. And one of them is to try and create some legislation and some movements around water and housing as a human right and what that means. But I actually believe that we actually need to change the state and the system dramatically for us to be able to really, really win that. And we'll do that by talking to each other, I believe.
Is there a large houseless community in Appalachia?
I've seen widows evacuated from their homes and being torn down. Back when the industry moved in, we had a capitalist society where we had company housing and company script, and you shopped at the company store. And so, you know, part of them having ownership over our land, they have ownership over our housing. And so when they want to come in and mine, they just want to evacuate these widows where their husbands had sacrificed themselves and for their family and died. And so they want to come in and mine or build a road. You know, the coal industry owns it, so they come in and just evacuate you and tear down your house if they just don't move in and take whatever they want anyway. So yeah, I don't really think there's a lot of homelessness because we have a lot of hospitality in Appalachia. But, you know, I don't see a lot of it in my area, but it's disgraceful that, you know, you get evacuated from your homestead, and a man can, you know, serve his country and he can work so long and for an industry that can just come in and evacuate his widow. It's sad.
I know in a social forum, it was a group from Appalachia, and I blowing up.
Direct Action Welfare Group.
Yeah. And it was blowing up the mountaintop, and it's polluting and causing damage to the birth rate and the people there. And not only that, but to the nature and the animals and stuff. Is anything being done about
it? No. Our leaders don't support us at all. They come in and destroy an entire habitat. You know, ginseng in West Virginia. Ginseng in West Virginia, you know, you're only allowed to harvest it a certain time of year, but they come in and blow it up. But, you know, something else that happens that people don't realize is our heritage to us. People, we have old cemeteries on our mountains with World War II veterans. People rush to get them registered because they'll come in and blow them up. I have a lot of Eastern Cherokee heritage. You know, my family had settled in the mountains before the coal industry came in, and they come in and blow up our Indian burial grounds.
It's just devastation and resistance from the people working together. So thank you for sharing some of your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Detroit City is one of the finest in this world. Yeah, Detroit City is one of the finest in this world.
This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Ground Zero, Detroit, Michigan, at the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And I'm here with
Monica Lewis Patrick of We the People of Detroit.
Okay. Monica, can you tell us what We the People, not the Constitution, but of Detroit do?
Yes, sir. We the People of Detroit is a nonprofit organization that was established about 7 years ago to combat the issues right here in the state of Michigan, in predominantly urban centers. On both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans have destroyed public education. And so a group of mothers, about 12 women, got together, and we began to mobilize our children and ourselves to combat the destruction of public education. And we beat back the control of mayoral control over our schools. But from there, we continue to organize around issues of police brutality, around issues of water, around issues of housing, around issues of land. And so that has been our charge.
And I like that, because without We the People, you don't know your rights if you're not going to school and they can do what they want to do with you.
That's right. And that's what we're seeing here in Michigan. I don't know if folks are aware. There is a law that they're using. It's called the Emergency Manager Law, that they're using in 27 states in some form all across this country to deny people their constitutional protections. And so we were a significant part of the on-the-ground leadership to mobilize, to garner about 2.3 million votes to beat that issue back. But then what we saw this very draconian leadership come forward with was to aggressively target the most poorest and vulnerable members of our community by denying them water and also denying them housing. Because when water is shut off, those houses can actually be condemned in the moment. And then the biggest fear for me and what my organization targets is the removal of people's children. If there's not running water in a home for 72 hours, children are under the threat of removal. And we have seen many children removed in Detroit and other surrounding communities in Michigan because people cannot afford water and housing.
So what you're saying, that they creating separatism, creating that it's bad for you to have a child. And so Department of DHS don't look at it that state, the city, is creating these problems, but they going after the family that problem is created for.
Exactly. Exactly. You said it so well. What we're seeing over and over is, just with our most recent governor, Governor Snyder, he's only been in office one term, but what he has done is he has cut cash assistance to women and children with and families. He has cut, I mean, there is no cash assistance at this point. After 5 years, you are totally cut off. So if you have a child after 5 years, then that child will not benefit from any of your tax dollars or any of the government assistance that should be available to them. The other thing that they've done is cut the money that's available for persons that are unemployed. They've cut it from 26 weeks down to 20. They have cut pensions in the city of Detroit as much as 33%. So all of the safety nets and all of the mechanisms that were created to be able to help maintain a quality of life, this administration has intentionally destroyed in order to force more people into poverty, in order to move them out of their land and their houses as a gentrification strategy. We call it genocide, they call it gentrification.
If they cut knowledge, what about Social Security?
Well, so Social Security is under a national threat. Okay. What most of us as Americans must understand is that we have a rogue government in place. We right now are living in occupation, and we have been colonized in many of our urban centers. And so with that knowledge and an understanding of what's happening internationally, this gathering has begun to connect the dots so that we see ourselves as part of of an international community as opposed to our siloed issues in our respective communities.
So I noticed, again, that people back in Oregon and the cities and states I visit know I go throughout the country to help organizations and the helpless communities. I noticed that all the big metropolitan cities, and they've been under attack. They've been forced removal, like you said, forced genocide, and gentrification.
Yes, sir. Well, many of our urban centers, actually due to the Industrial Revolution era, many of them sit near bodies of water. And that's because shipping was a major part of transporting metal and steel up and down the East Coast.
Chemicals.
That's right. And so with that, you have major hubs of black folks and brown folks and poor folks in places like Baltimore, in places like St. Louis, in places like Detroit, in places like, I mean, we're here.
Chicago, everyone.
Exactly, Chi-Town, our cousins in Chicago. And so all of those places sit on water. And what we know, Benton Harbor here is a small community, but Whirlpool is there. And Whirlpool is there because it's part of the Great Lakes. Right. And so when you're looking at 20% of the world's fresh water, actually 20% we sit on here in Detroit. Chicago's what, an hour and 45 minutes away. So it's all on the shipping line of where goods and services are brought in. Also, what folks know is that by the year 2040, 50% of the fresh water we have today will not be available. And we also know that by the year 2020, we will be reducing ourselves down to only about 1% of quality drinking water due to fracking and all of the abuses and misuses of our waters. And water in Detroit is directly connected to housing. So you can't talk about water without raising the issue of housing. And so what we know in Detroit is that the predatory banks, the same banks that focused in on urban centers to be able to assault African Americans and others in taking away what has been our largest investment, which is our homes. And so now what we see is the government is actually, they're fining the banks and they're getting that money into their coffers, but there is no national plan to be able to restore those persons that have lost their home due to predatory practices.
As we call, as you see now, they using water since the monetary figure, the houseless community learned to live without money. We can't live without water. So now they want to capitalize on water and use that as a means of control.
Yes, sir. Well, we've seen, as I'm learning and getting more educated on the water issue, because I've only been working on water for a year, is that the water is the new gold. It's the largest and biggest commodity that we have, because everyone understands that it is a sustaining life source. You cannot live without it. 3 days of no water, body organs begin to shut down. And so with this new struggle and being significantly, and I believe predestined to be in this moment and in this space, is that what we recognize is that, especially the melanin family members, is that our power is being restored because we have been strategically placed to be the vanguard of certain key areas of water, streams, and bodies of water. And so I also believe that connecting our issues and struggles around water and housing to what is also happening to our children by being criminalized and victimized is actually building our army. And so what I believe that those that would plot against us have plotted against our good is actually returning good to up, because our children are, they're understanding the importance of the land, they're understanding the importance and value of water, and they're understanding their space and their time to lead in this moment.
Can you tell us how the water companies are removing families and separating from their homes and creating houselessness?
Yes, we have here in the city of Detroit for about 30 years, there have been a group of women that have been working on the issues of water and water sanitation in Highland Park and in Detroit. Well, what we discovered over the last couple of years, really since 2012, is that the water department had been systematically stripped. The Department of Human Services, which was a department here in the city of Detroit, was the one that actually provided the coordinated effort of persons that were unable to pay their water bills. They provided them with assistance. Well, the governor of the state of Michigan strategically removed the Department of Human Services. So we don't have a Department of Human Services in Detroit, and we don't have a health department in Detroit. So they wanted to make sure that none of the harm that was done by shutting off water and forcing more people into homelessness was recorded, documented, or assisted. And so what we have is with water shutoffs, they are shutting off families for water bills that they don't even owe. They are shutting off seniors for bills that may be the water bill of the business across the street. They are taking people's homes based on the fact that if there is not running water immediately, that home is condemnable. Well, they have a plan in Detroit called Detroit Future Cities where they have already mapped out certain communities where they want to force the citizens out of their home in order to make, and this is the irony of it, they want to make those communities waterways so that the wealthy can ride their boats from those communities down to the Detroit River. So they are denying the citizens of Detroit water in order to put water on top of houses and land to make waterways for their leisure.
And another thing that I learned by talking to multitudes of people here in Detroit, that once the water company cut off your water, they contact Department of Human Services and they come take your children.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've gone from door to door. My organization, We the People of Detroit, we actually head up the canvassing here on the ground for the city. And what we've seen is that as we go from house to house, that there are water hoses running from home to home because persons are taking it upon themselves to help their neighbors to avoid losing their children or losing their jobs. We know that your hygiene is a key part of how you present yourself to the world. So if you don't have the capacity to keep yourself clean and keep your children clean, then automatically society begins to stigmatize you as unfit. What we're saying as not only mothers and community organizers is that we must decide where the line is drawn. And at this moment, we will not allow one other family to be stigmatized with a water shutoff. This summit has been what I would consider the tip of the spear for moving forward with a collaborative, well-constructed strategy of how we are as a human family going to help our neighbors and our friends maintain what we believe is a quality of life and a human right to water and housing.
And so that's how this connection is to us in a houseless community, where now people in houses know how it is to try to survive without water. Let's try to survive. I mean, you don't have water, you can't wash up.
That's right.
You can't use the restroom. You ain't got nothing.
You can't make your baby's formula.
You can't wash your clothes.
That's right.
That don't mean you're a bad person.
That's right.
Just these things is not accessible to you.
Yes, sir. And we've seen that over and over. Many of our residents have these kinds of acts of war, you know, shutting off water and removing people from their homes, or acts of war have actually placed a lot of our people into this psychological state of feeling as though they did something wrong, that they just didn't do all that they could. And what we found is, no, that is not the case. These conditions have been imposed on you. These conditions of occupation, these conditions of what I call reptilian policies that are definitely anti-people, anti-workers, anti-families, that we the people, and when I say that term, I'm using it as the collective family of the planet, must redeclare who we are in this moment, and we must give them the assignments of what will happen in this moment. And so I'm so grateful for the opportunity that you've given me to speak on Detroit, but I also must lift up our family in Flint, who we're working with, our family in Benton Harbor. This gathering has connected us with leadership from 47 states, as well as yourself. Also, 10 countries are present. And so I believe the work that you've done in terms of houselessness and the work that we have been doing on water, combining these efforts, are building a mighty fist that is going to move our agenda forward.
Okay. Now, eye-opening question. The government, this land was free. I mean, the world is free. God put it here.
Yes.
It was free. But they came over here and they took over land. Now they took over elect. Now they taking on water. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to take over AirNet?
Oh, I think it's on their agenda. I think it's very high on their agenda. Because right now, and I've said it, when the United Nations came to Detroit last year on the issues of water and housing, our organization, We the People of Detroit, very boldly, very directly declared genocide. We charged genocide. We charged genocide on President Barack Obama. We charged genocide on the Congress. We charged genocide on the mayor of the city, Mike Duggan. And we charged genocide on Governor Rick Snyder. Because all of those persons have been duplicitous and collaborative in actually destroying what could have been life-sustaining and helpful tactics. The city of Detroit took over $300 million that was meant to keep people in their homes. Some of that money was meant to actually house homeless persons, to help them get into housing. But what they did is they gave that money to a billionaire by the name of Dan Gilbert to create a blight authority in order to destroy homes. And this was signed off by President Obama. It was signed off by Mike Duggan, the mayor of the city. So we understand that some of these agents that we look to for solutions are actually collaborators with the monsters that mean to kill us.
So does this encourage you to see how many cities you say?
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's 47 states.
Yes,
it's 47 states,
10
countries.
Does this encourage you that
it does?
Hope?
It does. And I tell you what was the most moving part of the whole weekend, other than, I mean, I'm so inspired by your work, inspired by all of the amazing leaders that are here, but it was the youth.
That's it.
It was the youth. It was the yesterday morning when our youth could serve so well articulate the harm and the destruction and the data. And they were able to give us a perspective on housing and water, not only from a local level, a state level, but an international level. And so I really appreciate their voice. I'm so excited that every group has committed to have more youth come into this work, be mentored into this work, and shepherded into this work. I know that we've already made commitments to be at the powwow in New Mexico around water. We are coming, hopefully, to Philadelphia around housing. And so there is some teaching and there is some training for our young people to begin to move into their leadership right now.
Thank you very much. And you heard that from We the People, not We the Government or We the Culture.
Thank you, sir.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today I'm here with
Willie J.R. Fleming, Executive Director of the Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign.
And J.R., what brings you to Detroit?
Well, it's family. It's about organizing around the human rights to water and the human rights to housing and how we can take this fight that we have for human rights to water and housing and collectively approach these systems and institutions in place to remove these barriers that would deny us the right to housing and the right to water as a basic human right.
And what can you take back to your organization about what happened here?
Well, there's definitely a new poor people campaign being formalized, and there's definitely a lot of collective work that's being put in, definitely in the Midwest region across the country. And folks are committed to work together as a collective because their fight today will be our fight tomorrow.
And I noticed that I visit Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Jackson, Mississippi, Denver, Colorado, and most of these places I tag CCs. And for the listener audience, CC means Chocolate City.
Right.
So why do you think this is happening? They creating these big cities. They big cities, and they used to be tourist attractions in these CCs.
Well, I think this is most definitely an evident plan of urban removal or Negro moving or African descendant removal, however you want to phrase it. But these are Chocolate City. These are large metropolises in America that traditionally have had great population of people of African descent and working class Africans. And what we're seeing is a form of forceful evictions, internal displacement, and genocidal acts being attempted on our community to remove us from this land. You know, we always say that we've been a very nomadic people since they removed us from our birthplace of the continent of Africa or the continent of Kush. And we say no more. So we tired of being nomadic. We tired of running from place to place. Nowhere in America do we have a history of over 50 years in one place, and it's time for that to stop.
And I listen to you, and I listen to the people talk, and it's not just affecting the African-American community or the middle class. It's affecting the poor and the white people.
That's right.
The Native American, the Hispanic, the Asian community. Why do you think this is happening?
Well, there's a saying, today me, tomorrow you. They used to say this was the problem of the Negro, or this was the problem of the Native, or this was the problem of the Latino. But today we're seeing in America in 2015 that these policies affect everybody. They're equal opportunity oppressors. So the same plight that we're going through, white folks are now experiencing. Poor folks are starting to experience, and working folk. And so that's why we must come together as a collective, because this know no race now. This problem that we're facing, commodifying everything, land and water, it knows no race. And it has no certain place where it'll just roll out. And so now we're starting to see how these policies are really taking effect on everybody. The Asians, the whites, the Latinos, the Black, the Native, you name it. You know, we call it equal opportunity oppression.
That's good. Okay. Now, the connection between the work you're doing and the work people are doing here, you can link that to houselessness. So when you see a houseless person, and I know I used to say it, I was biased that they must be lazy bums, but that don't exist anymore.
Oh,
so
no.
What can the community learn from the houseless people?
Well, there's a lot you can learn from the houseless people. They'll tell you that everybody in America is one check away from being homeless, right? Because of our failed economic policies, a lot of people have failed by the wayside. You have people who are supposed to get benefits the rest of their life, like veterans, yet they lay on the underpasses, yet they're sleeping on the bridges, yet they're sleeping outdoor in the open in the park and being criminalized just like the common man. And it's sad to see. So we all can take a lesson from homeless and houseless people and say that that's them today, tomorrow that can be me. So while I'm here today not houseless, what can I do to ensure that I won't be houseless in the future?
Do you think this is a plan organized by this country to create homelessness or houselessness?
Oh, definitely. I think corporations, the corporation that rule our current Congress and Senate, that rule our legislators on a local level, I think it's their intention to create the problem so they can go screaming at the government about them being the solution to the problem they created. So I think this is by design. You know, this is nothing new under the sun. The same issues we're facing today, they faced during the 1930s and the 60s. It's just history repeating itself. And so we have to learn from the struggles of the past and equip ourselves with better tactics and strategies than they employ. In some instances, using their tactics and strategies to address these issues. But this is nothing new under the sun.
They use money, and they use money to control people. If I got all the money, you're going to work. Now they're utilizing the resource, the natural resource, to control people.
I mean, that's what it is. You know, it used to be that money was the way in which, you know, they kept you in position, kept you in check, kept you dependent upon them. Now they're taking natural resources because their dollar have no real value, right? And if they feel that this is something that directly going to impact your livelihood, then you're going to be in a place of desperation to operate and do as whatever they say. Because you got to think about it. He who controls the land controls the people. And when you control the water and the housing, you controlling the lifespan of a people. And so we really want folks to harness in on that. Don't look for the people with money to have power. No, look at these corporations that's controlling the water. Look at these corporations that's controlling the land. That's where the real power lies, because that's a natural resource you need to live off of. And when that is privatized, one has to ask itself, what are my human rights to life?
So now that they control the monetary regime of this country, they're controlling the water and electric, do you think they're going to control air?
You know, I often joke with people. You know, I say, look at it. They done privatized the water. They privatized the land. It's only a matter of time before they privatize the air. You know, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but people always ask me, what do you mean? How can they privatize air? Well, just release a foreign agent into the atmosphere, require people to use oxygen tank to walk around in public, and then you minimize the amount of people who can afford an oxygen tank to go out the house. So that will become very interesting, but I'm quite sure they're going to find and devise a way that they control our air intake. I mean, just given how they're taking the water right now, right? You never thought they would have took the water.
No.
Air has to be next.
Air, yes. And that's the only natural resource that's left. They got land, they got water,
air.
Electric, now air. So we better save up our money and get some air tanks.
That's right.
Now, I met you with organization Take Back the Land, and where I was with Reclaim. How is that going on? And you was liberalizing people as houses. Is that still in effect?
Of course, you know, I think that's going to be in effect way after my time. You know, I didn't invent that wheel. We just recreated for our generation. But yeah, we're definitely doing land liberations. We're definitely doing more takeover, matching people as homeless people with people as housing. And the reason for this, we have to continue this, is because there never go a day in America, I believe, that someone's not in the need of housing.
Exactly.
And there never go a day in America, I believe, where discrimination in the workforce is not happening. And so as long as we don't have equal access to opportunities and wealth in this country, there's always going to be a need to take over a house. So we here for the long haul. We always say it like this. This land we taking, it was bought and paid for. Our ancestors paid it forward. When you figure out how we're going to get our 40 acres in a mule, we'll figure out when we stop taking them 40 acres.
Now we need 40 acres, mule, and water.
That's right, and water. Ain't no good. The 40 acres in the mule ain't good by itself no more. 40 acres of mule and water, right? Because you can't work the land with it. That's right. That's right, my brother. You're welcome, my brother.
Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And today we're in Detroit, Michigan, and Ground Zero for the first annual Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And I'm here with Monica Beamer.
And Melissa Mays.
Hi, Melissa. So Melissa is from Flint, Michigan, and we've been here at First International Summit on Housing and Water Rights in Detroit. And your story yesterday and the video we watched that the ACLU created it's pretty shocking. And so I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about what's been happening in the city with water.
On April 25th, 2014, Darnell Early, he was our emergency manager at the time, decided that we would save so much money by switching from our clean water source of Detroit that we've been with for 50 years to trying to treat the Flint River ourselves, which was unproven. We'd always just had it as a backup. We've never supplied, I mean, not in 50 years, hadn't supplied the water to the city. There was a lot of tests that weren't done. There were a lot of tests that weren't passed beforehand, and so how this got through is a big mystery to all of us. We were not allowed to vote on it. We had no choice. They made the decision for us, so we switched the water. Almost immediately, people began complaining about the smell, the taste. Their water was brown. People immediately, their hair started falling out. Skin rashes. I had a rash on my face for 3 months straight. Burned when you touched it. Then in the summertime, they gave us 3 boil advisories because the E. coli was so high in our water, people were getting sick. At the time, we did not know that we had been failing all the TTHM, which is total trihalomethanes, which is a chemical byproduct of high chlorine interacting with volatile organic matter, basically. So that it will give you cancer. It will make your hair fall out. It will make you sick. It'll destroy your organs, your neurological system. It's extremely dangerous. We failed the test in May of 2014. August of 2014, November of 2014. Nobody said anything to us until January. We got our first notice in January of 2015. So for about 10 months, we were drinking, bathing, using this water. Also, when you heat the water up and it releases the steam, you release copper, lead, tin, and TTHMs into the air, which it goes into your body a lot faster and stays a lot longer because it gets into all your systems. So back in August and September, when they told us to boil our water, they were making us even sicker.
And so they said this is to save the city money.
Yes.
But what has it done to your bills?
They're making you sick. Our bills went from about $80 a month all the way up to $522 I had in December, and then I got another bill after that for $764.
And what happens if you refuse to pay because they're basically poisoning you with water?
If you refuse to pay, which we had all thought about, if all of us did it, you know, that would stop them. They came out and told us that our sewers, well, they'd shut off our water, our sewers would be capped, so our homes would be condemned, so the land bank could come knock it down, which is the plan. And then our water department would report straight to CPS, and they would take our children for endangering them because there's no access to running water.
Even though what they're doing is putting poison water in your house. But
yes.
Yeah. So if you'd be willing to say, has this impacted you personally on your health?
Yes. Starting back in October, I was having a whole bunch of problems. I was tired. I had actually been going to the gym, drinking 100 ounces of water a day like you're supposed to when you work out. Couldn't lose weight. My hair was falling out. I've lost about 50% of my hair, and it just falls out from the root in handfuls. So I've got pictures. Was having rashes. My nutritionist, I had went through some testing. They diagnosed me with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so now I had to change my diet. I can't eat anything, gluten, nuts, dairy, nightshades, anything that could allergic reaction because my body swells up and attacks my thyroid. I started feeling a little bit better for about a month. December, I got sick again, and I had a 6-week-long upper respiratory infection, so my doctor sent me through more testing for lupus. So then now I'm dealing with lupus on top of it. And then a month ago, our water test finally came back, which I wasn't too concerned. I knew we had high THMs, but we never had brown water like a lot of people, so I wasn't worried about lead. We have copper and lead, high copper and lead in our water, and our water was clear. And now my family all has high copper and lead, and I have copper poisoning, which is what caused the Hashimoto's. It caused the lupus. And so now I'm seeing an environmental physician, which is not covered by insurance, paying for all the medication out of my own pocket.
For the listening audience, can you let them know what CPS is?
CPS, it's Child Protective Services.
Okay. Does this drinking in water, did it affect pregnant women?
There have been so many friends of mine that I know personally that have had early on miscarriages as well as late term miscarriages and stillbirths. A friend of mine, her niece just had a 6-month stillborn, and that's another byproduct of TTHMs.
And so are they refusing to connect all these health problems that you and your community are experiencing to the water, even though the tests are there?
They actually put a gag order on a lot of doctors. I've had doctors tell us, well, I'm not allowed to put anything in writing because I'm not an environmental physician. They're told us not to say anything about the water. Now, they, when you go to the emergency room, they no longer ask you if you're drinking the water when they used to do that.
And so there's amazing organizing going on around this, of course, because you all are amazing people, and this is just horrendous. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the work that's happening in your group and the resistance to this? And maybe also just touch on what is an emergency manager? We've talked a little bit about it on KBOO, tried to keep people apprised of what's happening. Oh, yeah. But
An emergency manager is basically when your city's in financial trouble, they try to avoid bankruptcy. So the governor appoints one person, and we've had three or four, I believe, that is supposed to help pull you out of bankruptcy. It's supposed to help you get your finances straight. Well, that one person has complete control over the entire city. The mayor, the city council, no one has a say. He supersedes everything.
Democracy.
Zero democracy. Because we've begged to his face, please get us off this water. I brought in, we got a hold of Aaron Brockovich, and she sent out Bob Bocock, who is 30-year water expert, and he told them, this is how you fix the water. This is how you fix the rates, since we're paying eight times the national average. And he said, this is very simple. And they said, no. He said, no, it's ridiculous. He said that to my face. The ACLU cell phone video, that was mine. I tape all the meetings because the things he said just blow me away. He does not care. People have cried in front of him, begged, said, please put us back. We'll pay $500 a month if we have clean, safe water, because all of us are paying the high bills and all the bottled water on top of it because we don't cook with it or drink it or feed it to or give it to our pets. So that's a terrible situation. So we've been marching, we've been protesting, we've gone to city hall meetings, we've taken over, we've gone to different communities. Right now we're in the process of organizing a march from Detroit to Flint, so that's going to be huge this summer. And we're just trying to get out. We've been on the news when they will put us out there. And we've done as many interviews as possible. I've sent my medical records to people to look at it, and I've been very open with what's happening to me. I'm 36 years old, and I should not be able to get out of bed in the morning. So all of us, there's a few of us that I've talked to that are like me, that are afraid that we're going to lose our jobs because we miss a lot of work because we're sick constantly.
One of the things you said yesterday that was very profound to me was, I think they're just trying to get us all out of here.
The mayor has concocted what they call the master plan, which I think is an interesting name for it, to where they want it to be a college town, a nice place to visit, a nice place to go shopping, but nobody lives there because they only switched the city of Flint. A block away from me is Flint Township. They're still on Detroit water. They pay a third what I pay or less, and they have clean water. Just the city of Flint got switched. And so I know people that have just up and left because their bills were so high, their water is unusable. They just abandoned their homes because their property values are next to nothing. And then when that happens, the homes mysteriously burst into flame, or they get bulldozed because the land bank comes and grabs them up. And then they get bulldozed over. They don't get rehabbed, nothing. Nobody lives in them because they just want it to be a nice little suburban town. And we all know it. We all know it, and we've claimed genocide. They're trying to get rid of us. They're trying to get rid of the poor, the working class, people of color, all of us. They want us out. So
the land bank is something that we've heard a lot this weekend. I was wondering if you would just say a bit about that. It's really like a big land grab.
It is. The land bank was supposed to help people be able to get into homes.
Well, that's what they said.
Yeah. Instead, our congressman set it up right before he left, because Dan Kildee used to run the land bank, and he set it up just before he left that the land bank, when a home is lost foreclosure, they are first in line to grab the home. Not a person, not another bank, not a citizen of Flint. They get to grab it first. They are first in line. So we're basically blocked from grabbing homes because there's two on my street that I would love to buy up, and I can't because land banks got them.
And all of this is manufactured crisis by the people who are benefiting from this.
Oh, by far.
So is the land bank, are they coordinated or coincide with the land trust?
I believe so, but not in a positive way. And it's just complete land grab. And I can tell you stories about Chevy in the Hole and about getting free land. And they're basically, we have a highly contaminated area downtown Flint, 130 acres where GM used to be. They're going to put sod over it and call it a state park. And it's so toxic that you're not allowed walking on it. But I have on our website, which is waterufightingfor.com, water spelled out like water, there's articles and links to all of this. We're just putting it up so people will be able to learn. I've had people come back after looking at it and saying, this is horrifying. I can't believe this is happening. And why it's not getting out. And thank you, media, which is owned by, of course, everybody.
Thank you for sharing your story and your work. And
no problem. Thank you for getting our story out.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Detroit, Michigan for the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And today I'm here with
Lisa Richards from Massachusetts.
Okay. And Lisa, what do you do?
I'm a low-income mom who's an activist and have been for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I work with the National Welfare Rights Union here in Detroit, Michigan. So I travel back and forth and organize low-income people and volunteer in the community supper and pantry, where I meet lots of people who are homeless, have no water, who are dealing with legal issues around poverty issues, and try to advocate.
So what brings you here today?
Just the human rights violations happening, and the organizing happening, and the activism happening, until everybody has their human rights across the board and able to take care of themselves and their family without being ill and having education and housing and health care and water and what we need to survive, then we'll continue to fight.
So, and I noticed when you stood up, you mentioned something about educate the children and stuff. Right. Can you tell us all?
That's because I have 7 children. When I became part of the movement, I had one child. She was about 6 months old. And I just feel that our children is our future and that they need to understand what Dr. Martin Luther King was doing, Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, all these people were doing, the Black Panthers, you know, all the people in the past, where we've been, so we don't have to keep repeating it, and how we can learn the lessons from the past, and how we can have the elders and the seniors and the religious people and all kinds of people from all different cultures and all different parts of life be part of the activism and changing it. Because it's not going to be people at a desk doing the change. It's going to be those of us on the streets, those of the street work, and all of it working together.
Now, when you was a child and you saw houseless people, were you biased towards?
You know, that's very interesting. I grew up in Concord, Massachusetts, and if you know anything about that, that's where Paul Revere was and Henry David Thoreau. It's a lot of, you know, I call it Richie Land. I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. So I was a low-income family. I was the oldest of 3 with a mentally ill father. My mother did struggle. We weren't on public assistance. We did own our own home. We were right there on the line. And I always knew we were kind of having a hard time. It wasn't until I was 19 till I found out about welfare and food stamps. I was working at a store and met welfare moms. I really didn't. I don't know where that really came from. I really never thought about people of their color or their religious beliefs being different or the economics. I don't know. It just never was pointed out to me. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of felt like everything was wrong when I heard those things. Mm-hmm. Like when you saw things on TV that were racist or homophobic or about low-income people or that kind of thing, just felt wrong to me. And so I stay true to that. And I have 2 children who are bi. So, you know, we are a very diverse family and we celebrate that. And our activism is our core and our beliefs. And we feel that if you stay silent, you're part of the problem. So you can be part of the problem, part of the solution. And our family values are to be part of the solution on a whole number of issues.
Now that you, your children, and hopefully their friends and their children, and maybe the rest of your family member are aware of the houseless community, when you see it now, what do you think?
I think it's pretty much the same. It's wrong, and I'm not going to stop until we take care of one another. But I feel like we also need to educate people why they're worth taking the time to figure out. They put their own kind of stumbling blocks in the way and how to work on their own issues and become survivors and recovery of their own stuff. Things you don't take care of yourself, you can't have the things you really need, along with the other stumbling blocks that are not our faults. So we need to work together on that and take care of one another and really take care of ourselves. And as an activist, I think that that's really important as well, is to kind of like keep your head on about the different things of how we can be proactive and how we can work together and how sometimes you just need to take a break and take care of yourself, because you can't do any work if we're down to 0.
So now that we both know, because I grew up in Chicago, I grew up in the project, so we both are activists from our roots, and now we know that people are people. We know that this government controls people by monetary figure. Now they take in our resources. They take land. Even though you buy your house, you have to pay property tax, or they come take your house if you don't own that land. Now they're taking water. What do you think about that? And they're creating homelessness, houses.
Sure is. Each time I come to Detroit, I see more and more of the houses down those same streets being knocked down, and it just puts a pit in my stomach. And I really wish that Massachusetts was a little closer to Detroit so I could be a little more active into the streets, you know. And some of my children are here today said we should move to Detroit. I'm like, but see, they're getting it, right? So I think that, you know, they are taking our water, they're taking our land, they're taking our housing, they're taking our children, and I think that's a really big part. They're getting one piece after another piece, and then they're going to break us down. You take your children from the mother and the family, that's the end of that family. They go into such, you know, there's no more fight left. And so I think that's where we have to really protect. We have to protect the family unit, whatever that family unit is made of, and that means that we're going to have to figure out how to get the water to them and make sure that their sanitation is taken care of, and also the power is also. In Massachusetts, there's like pipelines, and the electricity is like, I think Hawaii and Alaska is the only area that's higher for electricity bill where I live in Massachusetts. You know, my electricity bill is $500 a month.
Wow.
And everybody in my community has been talking about it on Facebook. It's outrageous. And so the water isn't my issue in my particular town, it's electricity. But I have a well. So without my electricity, I don't have any water either.
Wow.
So, you know, it's everywhere. And just because we're in Detroit today doesn't mean Boston doesn't have its own thing, or Chicago doesn't have its own thing, or Texas doesn't have its own thing. And that's what we need to see. It's not to us yet, but if it can happen in Detroit, or it can happen in California, it can happen in Texas, it can happen anywhere. And so I think we just need to learn off of each other, figure out how certain groups are making it in Venezuela and other countries, and how do they do it, learn off of what they're doing, and figure out how to make it work here, and just join together and just tell them, we've had enough. We, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are, what disabilities you have, what color you are, what religious beliefs you are, we're all people, we all need water, we all need our children, we all need our land to live on, we all need our houses, we all need the food. Knock it off. We're done, right? We're done. Stop hurting us.
So what you're saying, that they creating poor people, not, I say, a human congregation meeting together to fight their battles of the oppressor of making us, creating us in a certain category. So with that, in some cities, we complain about our rent. And that's when we talk about affordability. And that's part of this summit, affordability. And when we say affordability, we talk about the high price of food, the high price of clothing, the high price of apartment and housing. No one ever talk about the high price of utility, because in Detroit, their water bill is higher than their rent.
Right.
And you just introduced me to something. Your electric bill is higher than your rent.
It is, because I have a Section 8, so it is higher than my rent. It is.
When you're a young person going on your own, they, you know, that American dream, they educate us about how to provide, but they don't educate about the high rise of electric and water. And you come into this world and say, well, I'm going to be like mom and dad. And all of a sudden, you really got to have a job making 90 grand a year, or you won't survive.
That's true. That's true. And I think that's why in America, we're seeing, like other cultures, where we have multi-generations in our houses. You know, other cultures have always done that, where they have the grandmothers and the uncles and whatever living together in one big house. In America, quote unquote, white America, right, we're starting to do that, where you realize that families are separated because of income. It's breaking couples down. It's bringing up domestic violence. The drug abuse and alcohol abuse is a ridiculous amount of all kinds of crimes are off the wall. And people just are, they're just hurting beyond belief. The mental health is just off the chart. People aren't getting what they need. Health all over the place. And so that's just creating more and more chaos. And that's taking more and more attention away and more of our people away from us. And people are dying in Massachusetts by the hundredly of heroin overdoses.
Wow.
And those are some of our young kids, you know, just out there using whatever to escape whatever they're hurting. And part of that is their families just aren't making it, you know, and they're hurting. And so we're just killing off more and more of our kids. We're jailing more and more of our kids. The police brutality is through the roof. It is just like ridiculous. And so we have to take a stand. We have to get united across all of this. The unions have to get together with the low income people. And when they lose their jobs, they're looking for the welfare or the food stamps because their kids need it. And so we just need to learn to work together, like we've been trying to do. And then the religious leaders need to be able to talk to the people who don't so much believe whatever they believe, and still be able to get on the same force to fight for the water and the land and the food, the housing, and to keep families together. So, you know, we're just all one big human race, and we just need to figure out how to live together, how to keep each other.
Now, you name numerous of reasons why a person is houseless. That's a person, like I said, you grow up and then they educate you on these things you had to do, but then if you don't reach that plateau, you developmental issue. Do you think this is a plan, concocted plan by the 1% or the powers to be?
Well, you know what? Cocaine doesn't grow here in the United States of America. So that comes from somewhere. And I'm sure that those big ships that come, that all those people on there that work there, were seen by some kind of people that are supposed to be doing border patrol. So worried about the illegal aliens that come and pick our tomatoes, you know, and our strawberries. We should be more worried about the drugs coming on the boats that are killing off our people. But see, that's the big plan. So we have to be bigger than the big plan.
Right. Not allowing people their human right, and that's the rest, it creates sleep deprivation, and that can create mental issues too.
Yeah, if you don't have what you basically need, and you can't even put your head down when you know you're going to be safe, where you take a shower in the morning and feed yourself and your family and take care of the basic needs, it consumes your whole day. You know, where am I going to find a cot? Am I going to find a cot? Am I going to be in somebody's backyard? Am I going to get caught? Is there going to be a dog? Is the cops going to come beat me up? Am I going to end up in jail? Oh, maybe I'll have to go dumpster diving. And if you go dumpster diving, somebody's calling the police. It's just around and around in a big circle. Yeah. There are plenty of empty houses and plenty of empty buildings that everybody could have a place to live.
So why do you think the main media don't cover these stories, don't go out into the streets and talk about houselessness instead of projecting it as a people problem?
Because their money comes from the corporate America and they need their money. And so we don't have any money to pay the media blackout to stop. So they don't want to hear about people taking care of people. They don't want to hear about those empty houses really could be given to people and that they could have people who are in jail who probably have a trade like plumbing or carpentry or electricians that could donate their time to rehabbing those houses so people could be living in there instead of getting kickbacks like pay less. Every welfare recipient that goes in and fills out an application still gets money if you stay 6 months. That was welfare reform when Newt Gingrich. That was in the early 90s. Why are they still getting a kickback? To look at where you buy your things and who is getting the kickbacks, because that's where corporate America is putting corporate welfare and not be picking on the low-income people who do need housing vouchers, who do need WIC, who do need welfare, who need Social Security, Medicare, and whatever health care, because that's like 5 cents on every tax dollar, and figure out where your other 95 cents is going and pay attention to the bigger pictures. I mean, really, we just need to stop picking on the smaller people, because all we're doing is killing people off.
So do you believe in community policing, community accountability, and building community, mixed community, so we can learn from one another?
Yeah, I think so. There was a group yesterday, I don't have their packet, but they were two men that were doing the policing. They were very effective, and I saw them deal with the situation yesterday, so we didn't have to call the police, and I think that was handled very nicely. There's some kind of security, and they come out for grassroots, and they deal with battered women situations. So they deal with life and death situations, and I thought that was great. I think so. I think it can work. There are always going to be things that will happen that were wrong. People are going to get hurt because people can act crazy and be misunderstood, I think. But I think that we definitely need to come off of the power tripping. There's a lot of power tripping in the country, and I think that we just need to come down a little bit off of our ladder. If we just focus on taking care of one another, then we would do much better. I think even in the generations, the way that people take care of their seniors, there's a lot of homeless seniors. There's a lot of people who haven't seen their relatives in many, many years, and very disturbing to me that we're just like letting them rot in nursing homes or even in their own apartments, and nobody knows whether they've been fed or cleaned or taken care of. When was the last time they took their medications or got to a doctor's, or there's neighbors looking out? And I just think that's just the basic, you know. And if you're not doing any of that, then you're part of the problem. And you don't have to do everything, but everybody can pitch in a little bit, whether you make a meal for somebody, or whether you give a blanket or a pillow, or whether you give a bag of food to somebody, or you watch somebody's children so they can be more active, or you have some bail money for when that civil disobedience thing happens, or whatever part you feel like you can give. You know, when I say we the people, it's more than just going down and voting for a president every 4 years. You know, you have a lot more responsibility than that. You need to pay attention to what bills are happening in Congress and in your local state, and call and let them know what you believe in and what you don't believe in, and you stay on top of them when they vote the opposite way. And if you're not doing that, then I don't want to hear about your Pledge of Allegiance to your flag, because you're not doing your job.
Thank you much for coming to Detroit and being on our radio show and voicing your opinion. Okay, thank you.
Community Radio is proud to present